the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. Well, the debates are over. I'm not sure whether you really thought they were worthwhile or not. I have to confess, Jim, I fell asleep during the last part of this last debate this last week. The polls haven't moved that much. If you believe what the polls say, Mrs. Clinton will be the next president of the United States and the first lady president of the United States, first woman president. So the question we're going to ask is, if you're doing retirement planning, what does this mean for your retirement planning? Now, you wouldn't think that this would have anything to do with anything, but it's very clear that Mrs. Clinton wants to increase spending and to raise taxes. As to whether or not that happens depends on exactly what the population of the next Congress looks like, and as to whether or not she can push these agendas through a Congress which may be friendly towards her or hostile towards her. But let's stipulate that this actually happens, raising spending on the part of government and raising taxes. As a taxpayer, your taxes are going to go up then. What are you going to do?
Well, you know, let's talk about why we think taxes are going up. Well, number one, it's part of her platform. She's already stated that she wants to do two things. She wants to raise income tax rates, and also she wants to lower the estate tax exemption. Right now, it's $5,450,000. The Clinton plan would drop that exemption down to $3.5 million, raise the estate tax rates to 50%, and then for upper income individuals or larger estates, raise the estate tax to 65%, where basically when a person passes away, the government takes 2/3 of their estate in the form of taxes. But John, there's another tax that's hitting a lot more Americans, and it'll hit 6 million middle-class Americans this year. It's called AMT, the alternative minimum tax. And you may not realize it, but if you have losses, itemized deductions, property taxes, state taxes, charitable contributions, losses, property and casualty losses, tax-exempt income, your tax return has two computations that are done. Your regular tax computation, following the items on your front part of your tax return and the back page, but there's also something called alternative minimum tax, where they subtract out a lot of things. And the idea is, and this is why I always thought the Buffett rule of 30% was ridiculous, because the alternative minimum tax is 28%. And that is catching. It was originally put in place to catch more Americans that were using tax shelters the way we used to be able to use them in the 80s. And so that's when it was put into effect. But they haven't indexed it to inflation like they've done the tax rates and made very few adjustments to when those levels kick in. So the consequence of all that is more and more Americans are being caught up in this AMT tax each year, where, you know, they think, oh gosh, you know, my income was this, my property taxes were this, I paid this in my interest expense, and I paid this in charitable contributions. This is my taxable income. It doesn't work that way. There's a separate calculation. So more Americans are going to be hit this year. And this is going to hit a lot of people that do not have health care programs and maybe have lost their health care as a result of Obamacare. But the full Obamacare tax goes into effect this year, which is $695 for individuals. So if you're single, you're millennial, you're listening to this program, you don't have any health care, just be aware when you file your tax return next April 15th, you're going to owe close to $700. And if you're a family of four, you're going to owe $2,300. So that is going in. And then what we've covered on last week's show, bear in mind that you are losing, many of you, depending on your income, are losing your itemized deductions, your exemptions, and you're also having to pay additional Medicare taxes based on your income once it starts exceeding a certain level. So if you want to understand when that kicks in, we did that last week here on the program, so I don't want to repeat it now. So there are a number of reasons, clearly, right now with Hillary Clinton in the lead, as she gets in, assuming she can push through her agenda, she wants to raise income taxes, she wants to raise estate taxes, And the AMT, because of lack of adjusting it to inflation, is going to be catching more and more Americans. And many of you, as you get pay increases and things of that nature, could be subject to all of these other additional taxes, which take effect by phasing out your itemized deductions, phasing out your exemptions, additional Obamacare taxes, and additional taxes on dividends, capital gains, interest, and investment income. So it's really, really critical if you're planning for retirement, as you survey the background, and we'll get into some things that can help make this decision, but as you look planning for the future, it's very important that you start planning for higher taxes because they're coming.
Well, it's not just the fact that in this case, it would be the Democrats who wish to raise taxes. There was a report last week that the deficit is now $600 billion. Now, that got buried in the background of all of the other noise of the debate this week. But nevertheless, that seems to be the future, that it's going to be going up.
Well, it's going up for a number of reasons. First of all, the deficit for 2016, the government's fiscal year, ended September 30th. The deficit rose for the first time in 5 years. It was up by 34% from the previous year. And this is very, very important, the items I'm going to be mentioning here, because this is another reason why we're telling you, our listener, your taxes are going to be going up. If you look at why the deficit was up 34%, it went from basically $400 to $600 billion. A number of reasons. Payments for Social Security was up close to $33 billion. If you look at Medicare spending was up $60 billion. If you look at Medicaid, that was up, and then also interest on the debt. Now, if you look at where the government spends money, and we've covered this a couple times on The Big Picture on our Saturday show, but almost 68% of the government's budget is now on autopilot, meaning you can't change it. It's going up. And that's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt. So if you take a look at, we'll get these figures for 2016 here shortly, but for 2015, Social Security was $882 billion. Medicare was $541 billion. Medicaid was $396 billion, and interest on the debt was over $400 billion. So you take a look at those drivers. These are going to be the drivers that are going in place, because Social Security payments are going to be going up each year. It's because, number one, there's a cost of living increase, even though it might be small. Two, there are more baby boomers heading into retirement, 10,000 boomers a day heading into retirement. That also is raising Medicare payments, because under Obamacare, the cost of medical insurance, and you've seen this, for example, the state of Florida just allowed insurance companies to raise insurance premiums 14% for 2017. If you are over $85,000 of income and on Medicare, your Medicare premiums, because you're in that 30% group that is not protected by what we call the hold harmless clause, your Medicare premiums are going up 22 to 23% next year. They'll have the final numbers here shortly, and we'll report them here on the show. So these drivers are in place. And according to the Congressional Budget Office, the deficits will now start to escalate every single year for the next decade. And John, that's assuming that interest rates remain where they are. Remember, for every 1% increase in interest payments, or let's say in the bond market, if interest rates go up 1%, it costs the government now $200 billion of additional interest expense. So you can see that this figure is going to get bigger. And, you know, on top of an already escalating budget deficit that is going up by itself, but if the candidates get in, either one, they both want to increase spending. Trump wants to increase spending, but he wants to lower taxes to stimulate the economy. Hillary Clinton wants to raise taxes and increase spending. So the message coming from Washington is loud and clear. This deficit is going to get bigger, which means politicians, and what politicians are going to do is they'll say, look, my goodness, we're back up to trillion-dollar deficits, which we could be very shortly in the next couple of years, back to trillion-dollar deficits. So, John, you could be seeing, just as George Bush doubled the national debt, Obama doubled the national debt. And we talked a little bit about that on the weekend program. With $10 trillion of new debt added by the Obama administration, it failed to produce a robust economic recovery in the lowest interest rates. So, unfortunately, they start raising taxes, it's just going to make the economy more moribund. And we think next year there's a high probability that the U.S. economy will go into a recession. So anyway, higher taxes are ahead of you, and that's going to bring up some key questions when you're talking about planning.
You know, the standard jargon is that they only want to tax the rich. But if you look at it, the alternative minimum tax, the AMT, is getting more and more people. Now, inflation, of course, is pushing people up. That's what's changed the trigger thresholds on the AMT. We're losing exemptions. We're losing deductions. You know, there are going to be more changes of that. And when you hear politicians talk, you know, I keep looking. Look at your phone bill, for example. They hold these little fees and other things that are added on there, which substantially add to the price of your phone bill, which is a tax. There are taxes. You're finding more and more ways to impose taxes.
Well, it's the old saying, if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it is a duck. They call it fees, but really it's taxes. In addition to raising income taxes and raising estate taxes, we talked about this in the past, but there are four areas that they're looking at to raise substantial taxes. And I always say, follow the money. Where's the money? Well, we know, for example, with Obamacare, they're going to start taxing in 2018 Cadillac plans. So one of the areas that they are looking at, they won't call it a tax, but making your employer-paid healthcare plans taxable, because that would raise $785 billion of taxes by taxing people's healthcare benefits. The second thing they want to go after, and even though dividends are taxed twice, they're taxed once at 35% when a corporation earns a dollar of profit, and then they're taxed a second time when the corporation distributes a dividend to you, the investor. That would raise $632 billion in tax revenues. They're also thinking of capping at lower levels of income the ability to contribute to a 401k plan, a defined benefit plan, or an IRA plan. And we'll get into, for example, how this is done with Roth IRA contributions. That would raise $500 million. And then the Clinton plan would reduce mortgage interest expense to $500,000. Right now, you can deduct the interest you pay on a mortgage up to $1 million of a mortgage plus $100,000 of a second mortgage, let's say a home equity loan. So right now, you can deduct the interest of up to $1.1 million on your home, and she would drop that down to $500,000. So there's four ways that they're looking at, and these are the big ones. And the other one is estate taxes, even though it doesn't raise anything. They're saying there's probably only 250,000 people that would be subject to the estate taxes. So there's just, you know, that's not a lot of voters. So it's more likely that the Republicans would go along with that, just like they did with certain tax increases in the 2012 tax bill, which raised taxes substantially. So here are a number of reasons why your taxes are going to go up. And it's very, very critical when you're looking at planning for the future, whether you put money into, let's say, a pension account, an IRA, a Roth IRA, or even, let's say, a 401k at work, there's things that you need to do in planning. In other words, what is my tax bracket now, today? And you need to know what your marginal tax bracket is if you're going to be doing some planning. And what is going to be my tax bracket when I retire? And the gotcha that gets a lot of people is when they turn 70 and a half, they have to start taking minimum distributions from their IRAs or pension plans. And that distribution goes up every year that you get older. Now, figuring that most men are living now into, let's say, age 85, women into their 90s, I have several clients, one close to 100 right now, but a lot of clients in their late 80s, a lot of clients in their 90s. And some of these IRA distributions are getting to be quite horrific in size, because many of these people had large IRAs, or let's say pensions, that they rolled over, and those are going up. So the real question is, if you are thinking of doing a Roth IRA versus a traditional IRA, there are four major factors that you need to take a look at, because you may be surprised when you do some planning to find out that you're actually in the same high tax bracket, if not higher, when you retire versus, let's say, your working career.
What we need to do here is go into an examination of Roth IRAs and what the rules are. Let's look at the considerations that involve them.
Okay. If you are an individual, depending on your income, you can put $5,500 into a Roth IRA. And the reason that you would want to do that, if you follow the rules for a Roth IRA and leave that money in that Roth for 5 years, they are tax-free when you take the money out. Doesn't matter what the returns are. And in addition to that, in addition to the $5,500, if you are age 50 or older, you can put an additional $1,000 or $6,500 a year into a Roth IRA. So between a husband and wife, if they're both age 50 and more, they could put $13,000 a year into a Roth IRA. And now you don't get a tax deduction for it, but if you leave the money there for 5 years, it's going to be tax-free. And here's another one, and we'll show you ways to get around the income exclusions. And another Roth contribution, if you are working for a company that has a Roth 401k plan, the good news is you can put up to $23,500 a year into a Roth IRA. You don't get a deduction, but think of $23,500 a year growing tax-free. It will be tax-free income. And unlike your regular IRAs or your pension plans, when you turn 70 and a half, we'll get to this in a minute, you have no required minimum distributions. You can take them out or just leave them there. You can leave them there compound tax-free and leave them to your kids. They inherit it, assuming you don't have any estate taxes. They inherit it tax-free. So there are a lot of advantages to do this. Now, let's get to some additional rules because, as you would be aware, our tax code is quite complicated. It's very complex. And what happens is, depending on your income, they start to phase out your ability to put money in a Roth based on your income. If you are married filing a joint return, once you hit $184,000, they begin to phase your ability to contribute to a Roth so that when your income reaches $194,000, you are not allowed to put money into a Roth. We'll show you ways to get around that in a minute. And also, if you are single, once your income hits $117,000, they begin to phase it out so that once your income hits $132,000, you cannot contribute money to a Roth IRA. Now, there are several ways that you can get around that. And one of them is called the backdoor contribution. Another way to get around this is if you're at an employer working for a company that has a Roth 401k, there is no limitation on your income. You could put $23,500, even more than the regular Roth contribution of $6,500. And also, at some point in time, depending on what your income is, you can gradually convert your regular traditional IRAs into a Roth. Now, you would pay the tax up front when you do that, so you have to be very careful in planning that in terms of how you do it.
Yeah, using the concept of the back door, that sounds like something really secret or
shady.
That's the word I'm looking for, shady. Is it?
No, actually, it's perfectly legitimate. Let's say that you are, a single individual, and you make more than $132,000 a year. So you can't contribute to a Roth IRA because of your income limits. Now, what you can do is put $6,000 into a regular IRA, of which you would get a tax deduction, or you may not get a tax deduction if you exceed a certain level of income, because just as there's income limitations for Roth contributions, there's income limitations for IRA contributions. We don't have time to go into all of them because, we'd be talking about so many rules because it gets quite complex. But what you do is, when you put your money into a Roth IRA, what happens is you would file on item number 32 on the front page of your tax return. It's called IRA deduction. So let's say you put $6,000 on line 32 on your tax return. It would say $6,000 contribution. Now, you would get a tax deduction for that. But also what you do is you can put the money into a regular IRA and then convert it to a Roth IRA in the very same year. So the net effect is you would get no tax deduction. The $6,000 IRA deduction you would normally get would be negated because on line 15 on the front page of your tax return, it's called IRA distribution. So you're both showing a $6,000 contribution to an IRA and a $6,000 distribution from an IRA. And that $6,000 distribution from an IRA is a conversion to a Roth IRA. So even if you have limitations on your income, you can get around that through what we call backdoor contributions to a Roth. So there's various ways that you can get around this with the backdoor contribution, the Roth 401k contribution, which is actually probably one of the best things you could do if your employer offers one. I know we offer it for our employees where you can put up to $23,500 a year into a Roth. And I mean, you imagine if you were putting $23,500 a year, let's say over a 10-year period, that's $230,500. And imagine what that would be producing in terms of tax-free income. And imagine if you went into growth investments, which is really what you want to do if you have a Roth. You want the maximum growth because anything it does is going to be tax-free when you pull it out.
Okay, so Jim, if we're confronted with a choice, what are the key considerations here, a regular IRA or a Roth IRA?
There's really four components that go into whether you want to do a Roth or you want to do a traditional IRA. Number one is your current tax bracket today working versus future tax rates. So you might say, well, you know, I'm in a 40% tax bracket or a 30% tax bracket today, but when I retire and I don't have this salaried income, based on what I think I'm going to have in terms of retirement income, I'm going to be in a much lower bracket. But hold on, folks, because I can tell you this. Taxes are going up. Either the phasing out of itemized deductions, exemptions, which are going to hit most middle-class taxpayers, the AMT tax, which is starting to hit middle-class taxpayers, that's coming. And plus, the income levels of which the tax brackets kick in. I know in California, they raised taxes in 2010, and then they raised them again in 2012, but lowered the brackets at which those tax rates are assessed. So the first one is your current tax bracket versus future. Secondly, is the impact of required minimum distributions that begin at age 70 and a half and go up every single year until you pass away. Number three, tax inclusive versus tax exclusive. We'll get into what that means. And then number four, the impact of estate taxes. Because let's say you have an estate that is large enough that it's going to be subject to estate taxes. And if Hillary Clinton wins, remember, she's going to lower the estate tax exemption by $2 million and increase the tax rate to 50% from 40% so that she can tax more estates. So you may be okay right now, but if she gets her tax bill passed and it drops down to $3.5 million, you may be subject to estate taxes. And let's say one of the major assets in your estate is your IRA. Well, what happens if your heirs have to come up with estate taxes and a good bulk of the assets are in an IRA? So you're going to have to take money out of the IRA to pay the estate taxes, and then you're going to also have to pay income taxes on the money you take out of the IRA. So that's a key component.
Well, following that through then, why don't we really get into the details? We're looking at different rules. Let's follow them down.
Okay, issue number one, where is your tax bracket today and what you think your tax bracket is going to be 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now when you retire? And you have to weigh the savings. In other words, if you put money in a tax-deductible pension plan, IRA, 401k plan, you're going to get a tax deduction for doing that. So let's say you put $6,500 into a Roth IRA, you would not get a tax deduction for that. But let's say you put $6,500 into a regular IRA, and you were in a 25% bracket, you would save $1,625 in federal taxes, not to mention state taxes if you're in a state that assesses state taxes. So you have to take a look at that. But here's the thing. The longer that you remain in a Roth IRA, and remember, once the account is set up, money has to be there at least 5 years, initial money. And I'll talk about a great idea here for you in just a second. But once you pass that 5 year mark, it's tax free. So the longer that you have to accumulate money and compound it on a tax free, I mean, it's one of the reasons Warren Buffett is one of the richest men in the world, is because he's compounded his wealth at a 15% tax bracket. You know, and Buffett uses a lot of tax-free ways to shelter his income. So think of what that would be if you are in a situation where you've got 5, 10, 15, 20 years or more to retire. And even if you are age 65, your life expectancy between you and your wife is probably 25 years. So think of that account accumulating and growing over a 25-year period, how large it would become, and all of that income becoming tax-free. A second reason you want to consider a Roth is at age 70 and a half, you must begin mandatory distributions from your IRA. And if you don't meet those distributions, there is a 50% tax penalty for not taking out the required amount. And given the fact that people are living longer into their 80s and 90s, that distribution grows and gets bigger every single year, which could eventually start pushing you into higher tax brackets. And once it comes out of the IRA, it is totally taxable. There's nothing you can do about it. Versus a Roth, it's tax-free. Well, we had two clients right now, both of them are in their 90s. And they had, it was mainly the husband's IRA, which was a rollover from a pension plan. And they started using IRA contributions as soon as you were able to do them. And those distributions now in his 90s are quite substantial. But what we have done over the last probably 15 years, because both of them are in their 90s now, is we have gradually converted their personal portfolio. We've taken capital gains and we've converted it into a tax-free bond portfolio, which is really more appropriate for somebody the older they get, because you want to take less risk. So we were able to counteract the increasing income that he was taking out of his IRA with building up a more substantial tax-free bond portfolio to minimize it. But the nice thing about Roths, as long as you, the owner, are alive, there is no required minimum distribution. There are required minimum distributions when it goes to your survivor or heirs.
And then the other two items you were talking about.
Tax inclusive versus tax exclusive, meaning that anything that you contribute to a 401k, traditional IRA, any kind of pension plan is tax inclusive, because you are going to pay tax on that money someday. You may not pay it now. You may not pay it for 10, 20, 30 years if you're young and accumulating for a period of time, but you are eventually going to have your day of taxes that you're going to pay on that money. And your heirs will also pay taxes on it. Tax exclusive is what a Roth will always be. There will be no income taxes once you had account set up and have kept it there without a distribution for 5 years. So there's a requirement. But once you pass that 5 year mark, that money is forever tax free. And finally, estate taxes. Because remember, not only is your pension IRA subject to income taxes and required minimum distributions, but also depending on the size of your estate, you could also pay estate taxes on that IRA. And what if that's the most liquid asset in your estate? Let's say you have real estate and a good bulk of your net worth is in your IRA. What are you going to do? What do the heirs have? They have no choice. They got to liquidate the IRA. And when they do that to pay the estate taxes, they're going to get hit with the double whammy with income taxes on top of that. So imagine if Hillary Clinton gets her tax bill in and there's a 50% tax, and then on top of that, because the tax is so large, you have to pay the income taxes, which can be as high as 44% or even higher if her tax rates go up to 50%. So you pay 50% tax on the amount in estate taxes, and then another 50% tax on income taxes, and not to mention state income taxes. John, you're talking about, I can remember, and I've seen this happen, where a combination of income taxes and estate taxes took nearly 70% or more of an IRA at death. So don't think it can happen. And the heirs are absolutely shocked when they say, wow, you know, here's $1 million IRA, and you're telling me that 70% of this is going to taxes? Well, folks, it could be 70% or even more. And it looks like with the way taxes are heading in Washington, and especially under a Clinton presidency, you know, it could be up to 80% or more. So this is another reason why you want to set up a Roth.
Now, there was one more thing you were going to bring in here, Jim, about why you should set up a Roth IRA.
Yeah, even if you only set up and put $100 into a Roth, let's say you don't have the money to do it. The reason you want to set up a Roth IRA is, let's say you set up a Roth IRA January 1st of this year. That starts the clock ticking for that five-year rule on the Roth. And what that means is 5 years from now, in the year 2021, anything that you have in that Roth IRA is tax-free.
Okay, so, but that's this year. But what happens is, you know, as you get closer in, say 2 years before the five-year period, is that still under the same qualification?
It doesn't matter. The five-year rule starts the moment you set up the account. That starts the clock ticking. So let's say 1 year before that 5 years up, you put in some more money. All the subsequent money you would add to that Roth IRA would be subject to the original date that you set the Roth IRA up. So the thing that you really want to do is get that clock started and get that five-year period over with so that you can make these additional contributions and they're all tax-free. And believe me, folks, with the way taxes are going in Washington, and especially with the Clinton presidency, and even worse, if the Democrats take over Congress, taxes are going up. They're going to go up for middle-class people. Don't buy this argument, oh, it's only rich people that are going to pay taxes. I don't need to tell you that if you're an American, because you've seen your taxes go up. Whether you've lost your deductions, your exemptions, you're getting hit with AMT, or the future when they start phasing out your itemized deductions, it's coming. So please do yourself a favor. Set up a Roth IRA, even if it's a $50 or $100, whatever it needs to get it started. Most mutual fund companies will let you start a Roth IRA or a brokerage account with very little money at all. So get that set up and start saving tax-free, because you're going to need it, because taxes are going up.
Reminder to listeners that coming up tomorrow on the program, Yolanda York from the Social Security Administration will be back with us here on the program about the intricacies and exigencies of filing either for Social Security or for Medicare benefits. Now, Jim, it's time for our life study. By its very name, that implies the fact that this is a real life event, and of course, the names of the people involved have been changed to protect their privacy. Also, our case study slides are available on our website. So if you'd like visual information when we go over the numbers and what it is we do for clients here, you can see that as we're going through this case study. All right, Jim, we have the names of our people this week.
And this week, we're going to talk about Brian and Rachel Flint, no relation to Larry Flint. Brian and Rachel are both 47. Brian and Rachel plan to retire at a regular age of around 65. Given their health questionnaire, Brian's life expectancy, age 90. Rachel's life expectancy, age 93. Risk tolerance, moderately conservative. Investment objective, growth with income, because at this age, they want their estate to grow. Brian was a business owner. He's focused mainly trying to minimize the impact of taxes and maximize his retirement savings. He's concerned about paying for his daughter to go to a private university, just like he did, and he would like to retire sooner and downsize. They're interested in relocating to where their daughter ends up, since she is planning to attend an out-of-state school. Rachel is a homemaker. She's primarily a stay-at-home mom, but she has recently started her own little side business selling crafts and other handmade items. She's comfortable with her standard of living and wants to maintain it during retirement. Her biggest goal is to help pay for her daughter's college education and possibly graduate school as well. We may have a future doctor or medical student here in the family. What's important to Brian and Rachel? Well, they want to maximize their retirement savings, obviously, because the goal is to retire early. They want to lower the impact of taxes and also pay for their daughter's education, and then eventually planning to relocate to not only where their daughter ends up, but maybe a state that has less taxes. Current budget, $50,000 for essentials, $15,000 discretionary, $65,000. Total salaried income of roughly from the business, about $118,000. Surplus around $53,000. Very modest lifestyle. They're really terrific savers. They figure that the budget wouldn't change too much when they retire. $45,000 for essentials, $10,000 for discretionary. Total budget spending around $55,000. Social Security estimated to be $30,000. So there would be a shortfall of about $25,000. All right, taking a look at their assets. Their non-investment assets, their primary residence was $420,000, and then they had a lot of $280,000. Investments, Brian's retirement plan was $615,000, Rachel's retirement plan, $85,000, joint account between them, $397,000. So total investment assets of about $1,097,000.
Overall, you know, Jim, as I'm listening to it here, it sounds like these people were in pretty good shape. So if there were challenges, what were they?
Well, like anybody else, nobody likes paying taxes. So, you know, the business was doing well. And, you know, basically, Brian saw the business income growing. And then also his wife had started a craft business and bringing on some extra income. So they wanted to mitigate the taxes. What was really important here was paying for their daughter's college expenses, and especially since she was, because of her grades, more likely to go to a private college, and also kind of juggling the competing goals of funding retirement and then also paying for college. And as many of you are parents that have children that are going to be of college age, I don't need to tell you sometimes the big decisions that you have to weigh between, well, we really know we want to put some money away for our retirement, but, you know, how are we going to pay for junior getting through college, and then eventually planning for a relocation. What we suggested, you know, at retirement, basically, there would be $30,000 of Social Security income. We basically went into dividend-paying stocks, and there are a couple of reasons. Number one, they wanted growth, and they wanted to build their estate, especially since their age in their 40s. And so dividends would only be taxed in their bracket at 15%. I didn't really want to do too much on the tax-free side, but we did put some amount in a short-term laddered bond portfolio at 2.5%. And the reason we did that is we wanted to keep some money liquid, given where we thought the markets were heading in the year ahead. So total investment income would be roughly about $62,000 less a budget of $55,000. They would have a surplus of around $7,000. Now, what we did to minimize taxes is we wanted to maximize deductions allowed to see them through their wife's side business, because now basically we were bringing on additional income with Rachel's business, and they could use the losses from selling a lot. They had bought a lot near a lake, and they were thinking of building upon it at one time and maybe making that a retirement home, but that since has changed. Unfortunately, they overpaid for it. So it was set up as sort of like an investment. And so that would allow them a tax loss, of which they could use $3,000 of against their regular income, and any additional loss carry forward in the years ahead or used to offset capital gains. By selling the lot at the lake, they would use the proceeds to fund a 529 plan that could be conservatively invested for their daughter. And the nice thing about a 529 plan, as you'll see, is the income grows, not only tax deferred, but becomes tax free when they use it to pay for college. The second thing we wanted to do is set up a 401k plan and use the Roth option as a result, because we could minimize investment income taxed at 15% and some of the tax freeze, but by contributing to a Roth 401k, they could put a lot more money, and they could allow them to put and save $37,000 a year into a Roth IRA. And the nice thing about that is if you take a look at, you know, $37,000 a year, and if you look at 20 years and a 6% rate of return, because we didn't want to use the 10% rate of return, but say 6% over time, that would be $1.4 million at the time that they retire. Now, assuming that they could get 3% on that, that would be 3% a year. They would be getting $41,000 a year or more, and it would all be tax-free. No federal taxes, no state taxes. And so they opted, by minimizing current income taxes, they opted for the Roth and the 529. So basically, the college education would be paid for. It would be tax-free. And secondly, when they retire, their Roth IRAs would be tax-free, and they wouldn't have to worry about increasing income over a period of time. So here are two underutilized tax strategies, one for education, and then the other one that we used for funding retirement, that would create a tax-free portfolio. And John, the Roth IRA is really one of the great tax planning tools for lower income and middle class Americans that don't have, you know, hundreds, if not millions of dollars to put together a muni bond portfolio. So I really recommend folks, you know, everybody should have a Roth IRA. I don't care if you fund it with $100, get that clock started, that 5-year time frame going, so that you can make these options available and compound your money tax-free, as we're going to be doing with the Flints. And if we do better than 6%, you know, they could have a couple million dollars by the time they get to retirement age, and all of it would be producing tax-free income in a time when the tax rates for all Americans are going up.
And again, coming up tomorrow on the program, our guest is Yolanda York from the Social Security Administration, exigencies of your filing for Medicare and other things connected to Social Security. So anything we're looking towards in the weeks to come as far as retirement, Jim?
No, really. We're just going to be focusing on tax planning, because it looks like for most Americans, our taxes are going up next year. So you better start thinking about it now, folks, and you don't want to wait for the last minute, as many people did when, for example, they raised taxes in 2012, and all of a sudden, you know, they got caught when they went to file their 2012 tax return in April of 2013. And, you know, a lot of clients were going, whoa, I didn't know about that. And so you don't want to get caught unaware that your taxes are going up. So the time to start tax planning for 2016 and for the years ahead is right now.
So coming up for the rest of the year, what we're going to do is focus on tax strategies. We'll talk about 529 plans, charitable giving, also planning for estate taxes. I mean, there's talk right now about raising estate taxes again, and you can do a lot of legitimate things, just like the big money people, including those big politicians who want to raise the estate taxes, things they do to avoid the very things they're saying we need to do. So all of that will be tax planning strategies for the rest of the year here on the program.
So on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.